Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, seasonal slackers. I hope you're good. I hope you're full of eggnog. I've literally never had eggnog once. I hope that you have all sorts of Christmas accoutrements around you, that you haven't electrocuted yourself on the tree, and that you're still perplexed about what they put into mince pies after all this time. I know I definitely am, and it's good to have you here, and it's good to share another interview with you, share another demo with you of a brand new artist. If you are eagle-eyed enough and you read the description of this before you hit play, you'll be like, oh wow, Sean Paul, all right, that's cool. And it was cool. It was a really good podcast chatting to him. Before I get into that, something weird has happened in the last week. The numbers of the Slacker podcast have gone through the roof. They've kind of like, I don't know how many times they've gone over, but like maybe 8 times as many as usual. Part of me is thinking it might be down to Spotify Wrapped. There was a lot of legendary people out there who had the Slacker podcast as their most listened to podcast of the last year. So big love to you guys for sticking with it and binging through the podcast. That's exactly what they're here for. And I guess greetings to the thousands and thousands of new people who've started listening to the podcast as of the last week. The good thing about this is that like you haven't missed anything because every single podcast is up there for you to listen again to, going back 2-3 years. You will find something that you like in there. You will find about 5 or 6 artists that you at least love if you're a music fan in there, because it's quite varied. As you can tell, this week, it's Sean Paul. Last week it was Ray. The week before that, was it Kurt Vile? Was it Conor Oberst? So like it's just me talking to amazing artists that I want to. I have some lined up in the new year that you're going to scratch your head and go, really? But I'm super excited about them because those sort of people, I really want to know what their life is like as a musician. I have lots of very, very interesting ones coming up in 2020. 2021, God, imagine we had to go back and start 2020 back at the start again. Fuck that. Yeah, a lot of new people signing up to the Slacker podcast Patreon as well, which is patreon.com/slackerpodcast. Thank you guys for that. And if you are fresh and you are new, why don't you subscribe to the podcast? And then that way you don't have to go looking for it every single week. It'll just turn up every Monday or Tuesday in your inbox or wherever it is you listen to your podcast. And there you go. You don't even have to think about it. You can leave it a rate or review if you want. But I feel like I'm past that stage of just going, review this, rate this. Does it really matter? Does it really make a difference? I don't know. Anyway, right, Sean Paul, I spoke to him middle of lockdown one, and I was very excited to speak to him because he's kind of outside of the realm of artists that I normally do. I normally sort of like do quite a lot of like, you know, alternative style artists. So like actually having somebody who's as pop as he is, and who's like literally done as much as he has done as well, I thought this is good. I like getting out of my comfort zone for these, and it's made me want to do it way more, and I will be doing it way more next year. So yeah, he was an absolute charmer. He was very, very funny, and yeah, like we had such a laugh for this hour. So here it is, the Slacker Podcast with Sean Paul in 3, 2. Like a podcast. I've got a cup of tea, staring into my laptop, and I can see Sean Paul looking back at me. And I'm not on YouTube. He's actually on Zoom. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, bro. That's not fair. I don't have my cup of tea. I should have known.
I'm a good Irish boy. Like a good Irish boy has a cup of tea with him. Like, what do you make tea the same way in Jamaica, or are you doing it differently?
I do make tea. In Jamaica, my grandmother's an English woman from Rugby. She's from Coventry and moved here in the 40s, late 40s, I think, or early 50s. And so I've got a little bubble and squeak here and there, and I like a sausage and mash here and there, and I like a tea here and there. But me now, I've grown up and I make ganja tea. I make weed tea, so that's my tea. I had some yesterday evening and I'm still feeling very fine.
It must have been a very strong cup of tea that you had.
You know, when you ingest it, lasts very long. So yeah, for me.
Do you have your own brand? Like, it seems like something like that, like you should like have your own brand off, right?
People ask me, and I've been approached by many companies. However, I just don't like what they're offering to me, and I haven't stepped to that field yet. I'm more concentrating on music. I do know a lot about weed, and I've consumed quite a bit in my time. So I'm looking into that, but it's not a rush for me. It's always been around. It was popular to me and my family way before it was legal, and so it will always be around for me, I think.
You know, yeah,
the herb that I love.
The attitude to it's like changed so much across the world. Like when I was younger, like it was seen as one of the worst things ever, and now like in America,
you're going crazy.
Yeah, and now in America, like in a lot of the states, it's legal, and I would imagine in the UK it'll probably follow suit not too long.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty dope. I mean, my father crashed a ganja plane in Miami when I was 12 or 10. And I was 10 years old. It was 84. And I was 11. And he, he'd never been back to the States since then. And he was in prison because of stuff like this for many times. I have many friends who have been locked up in jail for the same reason. And then, you know, Rastafarians was always telling us, it's the healing of the nation. And, everybody else, doctors and most people that were against it were saying it's going to drive you crazy. However, I started to know a lot of doctors and lawyers and people who just believed in it, like myself and like my fam. And so, it's amazing that it's been changing. I knew that it would cause a weird kind of effect on how it's grown and how it's, you know, just the regular farming operated and stuff. So that's changed, but I'm very happy that it's legalized mainly in a lot of areas now.
Yeah, it feels like a lot, like you can see that people are getting in on the ground floor and that it becoming legal. I did a podcast with a group called Run the Jewels, like a rap duo from New York and Atlanta. And like they were saying that they've got their own strain, and I was like, well, how do you go about that? Like, do you have to put a lab coat
on?
That's a long process. Like smoke loads of different types of weed. And they were like,
yeah,
yeah, He was like, I love my job.
It's crazy because it's months of going through growing the plants up and then testing them and then growing testing out the ones you like and then growing some more of that same version and then weeding out the ones that aren't so good. And so it takes like 6 months to a year sometimes to find your own, what they call phenotype. So I've been traveling a lot, so I haven't really had the time to do that. People have offered for me to do that, but that's kind of like buying a cat in a bag, you know what I mean?
But if you have obviously weed, like sort of, you know, like marijuana in your tea and stuff like that. But like back in the day, did you have it on the rider? Because like I'm assuming you would have went and played places that it would have been like illegal, and you would have had to put it on the rider as something else, like fruit and flowers. I think what they used to say, isn't it?
You could probably do that now in certain states and certain places, but I would never do that before. You know, I have a Jamaican visa. It's kind of hard to travel. It's been 30 years of traveling for me. And so I just always wanted to make sure that I never was caught doing anything stupid that was against the law at the time. And even now, I would never fly with it because it's not legal everywhere, you know? So,
you hear the stories of people like going through the airport and then accidentally finding it in their pocket like halfway through.
Yeah, happened to me before. You know what? You know what? What's funny? When you ingest it, when you take tea, you can't. It kind of. I don't know how to say this, but your farts smell like weed. Right? I've been walking through the airport already. And there's been, you know, those sniffer dogs.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, sweating like, you know, I don't want to do anything around here that's going to get that dog on my trail. So, yeah, funny stuff. But I know someone that's happened to already in the airport. And they had no weed on them, but the dog smelled them out and was like, attack.
So, oh my God.
You have to sit down for a couple hours and be checked out.
Yeah. It's like that's probably one of the most expensive farts he's ever done, like missing his airplane, missing his flight and all the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking exactly. Hell.
Never knew they had expensive farts.
Yeah, so crazy. So we're gonna get into a demo. Not a demo, sorry, like a real early track. I'll play it in now in a minute. It's Baby Girl, which is like the first single, right?
First release, yeah, bro.
Okay, right. So I'm gonna blast it in now.
Make a stop, hide the liquid makeup like a clown. Shot past the alligator. I am the baby girl, don't cry no more. They tell me, say you can't say the pain no longer. There's a way that boy for sore. They know say shot while love it could be stronger. Miss the baby girl, just dry your eye. For I and I could never answer. There's a way that other guy. And so tell him, say him could have kicked and beat him on a pizza. Say lift his flirter, one like a creeper and like a taker. And if you really big up, find another worker. I'll be down the streets and I'm a lion of Judas. It's just sincere, even hypocritical. My love for you is true, it's mystical, never partial. Why you listen to me, girl? Wouldn't treat you, wouldn't treat you like him, little polyquil. Missy, baby girl, don't cry no more. Tell me so you can't take the pain no longer. That's the way that boy be sore. You know, say shot for loving could be stronger. Missy, baby girl, just dry your eye. For I and I could never hurt you. That's the way that other guy. It's so tell him, say him could kick and beat you. And not tipper, and him and not copper. Oh, him could have won to your body like it. Him want you take the licking and the quiet. But enough he take it, girl, you live because it means that the rest a long time. Me, I say, you see me love you. But you never want me kiss and hug you. The other guy wants to kick and to beat you. Girl, you fi take it, him wreck it. But I will love you, miss the baby girl. I'll be my tar. Love it like this is only sent by Jah. Don't praise the office, girl, cause that's just a game. Love you for your body, but more for your brain. I'm gonna tell you this already, me I'm gonna tell you again. Don't make no one beat you, girl, that's just the same. And for the lazy mother,
girls that him want to do the same. But don't fear and come to town, fall for your protection. He said, baby girl, don't cry no more. Tell me, say you can't take the pain no longer. That's the way that boy me sore. He know say Sean Paul loving could be stronger. Me say, baby girl, just dry your eye. For I and I could have never hurt you. That's the way that other guy. It's so tell him, say him could have kick and beat you. Man, a bitter. Tell him his flirter. One like a creeper and like a taker. And if he ready, if he go find another worker. I'll be down the street and I'm a lion of Judah. T-shirt sincere. Even hypocritical. My love for you, it's you, it is mystical. Never partial. Why you listen to me, girl? I wouldn't treat you, I wouldn't treat you like a little polyphone. And it's a baby girl. Tell me, say you can't take the pain no longer. That's the way that boy be sore. He knows that Sean Paul loving could be stronger. Me say, baby girl, just dry your eye. For I and I could have never hurt you. That's the way that other guy. His hotel is sitting through the kick and beat you. And no tiffer, and him want no copper. Oh, him could have want to your body like that. Him want you take the licking and the quiet. But you know if you take it, girl, you left it cause me. So that's the rest a long time. Me, I tell you, say me love you. But you never want me kissing of you. The other guy wants to kick and to beat you. Girl, you fi check it, him wreck it. But I will love you, miss it, baby girl.
That was Sean Paul and Baby Girl, first ever single from the man himself. when was the last time you listened to that? Like, when was the last time you heard that back?
Oh, that's been a minute, man. And it sounds so squeaky to me, you know? My voice, like, baby girl, I'm sounding like crazy. I remember that was probably the first recording that came out for me. But I remember recording it and being like, it just sound right, and everybody's like, yeah, that's dope. And I was like, damn, okay. Now when I hear it back, I was like, I wish I didn't listen to them. I wish I went back more. Just because, you know, every artist has that side of them that's a kind of a perfectionist. And that's one of the songs that it was a hit for me. And it's, you know, I can still sing it today and people are like, yeah, that's, I remember that, you know, the day one fans, but also, it's one that I wish I had sung a little better in the studio. But yeah, dope song.
Man. I mean, if that's the first thing that you've ever released, most artists will go through like various iterations where they'll play under different names or they'll play in different bands or they'll release stuff and it mightn't go well. Very few people have a hit record or successful record with their very first release. Like, I mean, that kind of like, yeah, I mean, you must have felt like you were really onto something there, because like,
bro, it was a whirlwind ever since that. I mean, I had songs, but none of them were really released. And I was on a step out with Kara Jarrett where he sung over one of Bob Marley's songs, and I was in a verse, but it really didn't come out. It was a video on TV, but so it wasn't my first release. My first release was Baby Girl, and I just remember thinking, oh, it's going to be the same thing. Like, I'm going to release it. I'm going to keep on doing songs. And then the reaction, like, I remember standing up in a party in Jamaica and the DJ was spinning the rhythm and, you know, they put on mine and the whole place. And I was like, whoa. And it's whirlwind ever since. People calling me and wanting to do dope plates, shows, you know, ladies. It's been a good stuff ever since.
Yeah. Even like, even holding a 45, which like you can't release a piece of music in Jamaica without it coming out on a 45, especially like in the 50s. Like even just holding like acetate or whatever must have been quite special in itself, and having a DJ play.
To me that warm sound that you do get with the acetate is different now. You know, and kids nowadays wouldn't know. You know, I recently, in December, I went to a club out here, which was a younger people's club, right? So I went there and these kids are listening to music and I'm like, damn, this shit sounds fucked up. It's not the songs, but the system didn't sound right, man. And, you know, I was complaining about that, but the kids didn't feel the difference, so to speak. And it has a lot to do with a lot of people experiencing songs for the first time now on your phone. You know, everything is squashed into a little thing. You're not really hearing it in earphones, really. You don't hear the bass as good. So they're used to not hearing it that great. And sometimes, even though I know there's a lot more things out there, like video games and movies and apps and whatever, I think also that is a reason why kids don't gravitate towards music as they did when I was a kid, because you couldn't listen it really like just this. You had to have it on something that was like, you know what I mean? You heard everything in it. So that could be one reason. I'm not saying it is the only reason, but in that respect, it has changed a lot for me.
And that could explain maybe why reggae and dancehall and Jamaican music in general is quite bass heavy, because you have the sound system culture and people are outside listening to music. Like each sound system kind of wants theirs to be bassier than the next, because you can't really go trebly. You can't go ours is more trebly than yours. Do you know what I mean?
Nah, you have to have the exclusives. You have to have things that stand out, you know what I mean, as a sound system. And also the sound system gotta sound good. So the way we set sound systems up hadn't been done before on Earth. I've seen a documentary about it. So coming from reggae and dancehall is where the EP, the sound systems of every stage show now comes from. You know, you have the bass at the bottom, the mid-range in the middle, and the top end, the horns at the top. So that's something very innovative from our culture, which I'm very proud of, man.
I only started like understanding what like dub plates were just after I came to Radio 1. Like I grew up in Northern Ireland. Like a dub plate does not have a dub plate there. Like
Exactly. What is a dub plate? What kind of food do you eat off of that?
Exactly. Food from Dublin? I don't know. but like I got into listening to sound system music and sound system culture and clash culture quite a lot, like around that time. I was watching a lot of the Red Bull Culture Clash stuff. And I was like, this is fucking sick. Like Rodigan.
Special songs, right?
Yeah.
Explain it for people who don't know. It's like me, the artist, I'll have a song like Baby Girl that you just played and sing it with Phil's name in it. So Phil said, baby girl, don't cry no more. So I put your name in it, like for your listeners. And so it's a special song for you now. I think it's pretty cool when we do that. It gives me practice and it makes my song more popular. You know what I mean?
I got a shitload of dub plates then after that. Like, cause when I was on the I was like, right, this is happening. I got loads of crime dub plates. I got lots of rap dub plates. And one of my favorites is, Stylo G.
Yeah.
Stylo G, when he was starting out, was coming through the building, and I told him that I was the new David Rodigan, that I was like the new dancehall reggae. He fucking believed me. So about a month later, he sent me a track, and it was Bad Man, and it was like, I'll not do the accent, but it was like, Phil Taggart's a bad man from London, and then just goes on, and I'm just like, this is a great, I mean, I'm not from London, but fuck it, this is brilliant. And then in my DJ set, I was dropping four dub plates to open my set. I mean, you couldn't have a bigger look, like.
So wait, he said you were from London, huh?
Yeah, I was happy to go. I was happy to have a dub plate. He could have said I was from flipping wherever, like.
That's dope.
Have you ever been involved in like many clashes and stuff like that?
Clashes, so to speak, in my, I grew up uptown. So uptown is, what can I say? It's a suburban neighborhood. Like it's middle-class kids, right? And so for kids in my neighborhood to be spitting dancehall, like all of us did, we knew Shabba's lyrics or Supercat's lyrics, we would say them, but none of us, not many of us took it seriously. Like I could rhyme, I could do this on a track, I could have it out there, you know. So it's been funny to see the changes over the years. As to now, a lot of uptown kids are a lot of different people from outside of even Jamaica are doing this genre. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
mad vibe.
When you get like you sort of came up like in the uptown part of where you came up on, but like what was the music that you had in your house like growing up? Like what was the big artists and stuff?
For my mom, I was born in 73, bro. So my mom was like still on the Beatles, and she was like, yo, check all of this out. So, you know, also learning everything that was popular in my country, Dennis Brown, Bob Marley, you know, Third World. And then when I was about 10 or 11, hip hop and dancehall just started to become what it is, you know, start to be what it is, and become a lot more, I would say, for my generation. And I just got into those things like Supercat, Shabba Ranks, LL Cool J, Run DMC, Rakim, you know, Eric B and Rakim. So like all of those things were just flying through my head, influencing me that way. But as I said, the first foundations of music was definitely from my mom and my dad. They played the Beatles, they played disco music, they played reggae. Hmm. So yeah, all of that. You know?
It could have went a completely different way for you, because like you went to school and you sort of came from a heritage of great swimmers and water polo
players, and swimming, right? Yeah.
And you sort of played for the national team a little bit as well. Water polo is also a strange sport to play at a Catholic school. I went to a Catholic school, right?
Yeah.
And you sound like you went to a Catholic school way more than me, because your name's Sean Paul Ryan. This, like, that's the most fucking Catholic name I ever heard in my life. Like, I mean,
I didn't go to a Catholic school. I actually went to a Jewish school.
Oh, did you?
Out here. Yeah, but they didn't teach. They just had the Jewish holidays. It was owned by, I guess, the Jewish people. But yeah. We learned, we were very, in Jamaica, I think we're more accepting of a lot of different cultures in that respect.
Yeah.
When you're a kid, you grow up and there's no difference between the black and white, really. There's no difference between, it's when we grow up that it becomes more of a class thing, you know, who has money and who doesn't, because it's a small island. But, yeah, what was the question again? Sorry, I'm getting
mixed up here. It's Friday evening over here while we record this. My head's like half up my arse at the
moment. What are you drinking in that teacup, bro?
I don't know, man. I'm sure it's like it's got I don't know, it's got a funny leaf on the front of it. let's talk about your first show at Carlos Cafe. What was that like?
Yeah, that was dope. You know, big up to Carrot Jarrett. RIP to him. He was the first person that was just like, come through to my place and sing Friday nights. I was like, all right. Because he met me at a studio. And, you know, I was there amongst people who were singing like Purple Rain and playing guitars and stuff, and singing different songs like More Than Words Is All I Ever. And then I'm coming in like, hey, yo, we done alarm. This is how they get us. And people was like, what the fuck? So it was a weird setting for me to start in. But I did get heads to turn and be like, oh, wow. Because most of the time, it was just like a drink up, sing up thing. So people would be drinking, and the dude would be singing More Than Words. And you're like, yeah, More Than Words. And you're drinking and you're talking. It's more that kind of stuff. And then when I came in with my lyrics, it was like, whoa. So it was every Friday night for like probably a couple months, 1 year. And I really only had one or two songs. I would sing the same two songs.
Was it a local thing or was it a tourist thing?
It was local, very more local. Like after work, jam on Friday night, people go there. It was like a Italian restaurant / Lebanese restaurant kind of thing. So you could get hummus or pizza. And, you know, it was just a good little vibe, man. And people would go there after work. And so the show would probably start like 9 and it would go to 12, about that, you know. So yeah, I'd help set up on Friday evenings. And during those times, I was in school too. I was doing hotel management in school at a college out here. So, you know, my day would consist of going to the school and then going to set up. I also trained with water polo and we were talking about swimming and water polo. Yeah. So My family, my grandfather, my father, my mother all swam for Jamaica. And so did myself and my brother. We swam and played water polo for Jamaica. So my day consists of going to the school, going to water polo. And then on Friday evenings, I go set up and then do the show on Friday nights. And, you know, it just kind of led to me feeling more and more of the vibe, like, this is what I want to do more. You know what I mean?
So
does it really impromptu. Yeah.
Does this heritage of great swimmers run in your family? Because, like, you've got two kids now. Are they going to be, like, national swimming champions, do you reckon?
Well, one's 9 months old, and she's still drinking the water. So she hasn't gotten the concept of not drinking the pool or the bath water yet. But my son, 3 years old now, is going on 4, and he's starting to – he's been swimming a year and a half. But since this lockdown, he started swimming so much more so he could swim so much better. I've been at home, how long now? 4 months. Left here 5 times since this whole thing. So
all right.
He's been learning a lot of swimming. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. When you started out, were you good at toasting as well? Or was it just singing and like a little
bit? It was just kind of like I would emulate other people's songs, you know? So Super Cat. I'd say, where them there when they get to run out, where them there when they food for them. And I was just kind of singing back his lyrics. Shabbatou. I am mad, but I'm wicked in a bed. So, like, I would do those things for fun. And then, you know, when I was about 15 to about 17, I had this idea in my head that I was going to be a producer. So I told my mom, you know, she was like, okay, well, I tried to send you to music lessons, to piano lessons, and you skipped that. You didn't do that. And yeah. I was like, yeah, but I just feel like it's natural in me. Like, I don't want to learn numbers and quarter notes, and I don't want to do math. I want to do music. And to me, the music class was like quarter notes and stuff. And I was like, I never wanted to feel that. I wanted to play what I want, what I felt like hearing. And so I just got into music that way. And my mom decided to buy me a little Yamaha Casio keyboard that I begged her for when we went to a flea market one day. So she bought it, but didn't tell me about it until Christmas, and it had a crack in it and everything, but it had a drum machine section, and you know, I would sit there and build these rhythms back. So I thought I was going to be a producer, and never realized the MC in me until a few years later. I was probably 17, and I saw a friend who was in school with me, and he was a table tennis champion and I was a swim champion. And I saw him start to do this, go to the studios, and I was amazed by that, you know, and intrigued. So I started to follow him around, and he started to record and get songs out there. So his name is Don Ute. Big up Jason Williams, Don Ute. So he's the person who I saw doing it, which made me feel like, yo, I could do this too. I could really step out and do this. And a lot of other kids were wanting to do that, you know what I mean, from the area that we're from. And so, as I said, I started to follow him around. He would have parties, and I would help him out with the parties. I'd drive my van and pick up the liquor and drop it off at the venue and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was kind of gradual, moving from swimming to recording. It was just seeing him do it that kind of made me kind of focus, you know.
I feel like it's almost like it breaks parents' hearts when they see their kid going from like academia and sport,
yeah,
music, because like it's very rare, like in life. Like I can speak about this because I've played in bands and I've played instruments and like made my whole life around music, right? But very seldom you see a loser professional or a loser like sports person. But you tend to see a lot.
He's always gonna get his job, like, man.
Loser musicians.
Like, yeah, there is.
Like, that's how parents will think about it. So, like, you know, I'm sure like that they have a conversation with you to go and like, you need to get your shit sorted or any of that. Or were they completely behind you the whole way?
My mom was kind of like that and skeptical. She's an artist herself. She paints and she knows what it feels like to put a whole soul in a piece and then people just reject it like, or you know, think that it's too expensive to buy. And she always told me, you know, don't do this, do something else. Don't do art. Yeah, do art for your own, you know, pleasure and, you know, preservance in your brain. Like, but don't try to sell it to people. It's the worst thing. My dad, on the other hand, at the time when I started to rhyme and stuff, he was in prison. He went to prison when I was 13 and came out when I was 19. So all that time when I was developing an interest, he would write me and I would write him. And when he did come out, he helped me out by getting my it wasn't a dub plate, it was a demo tape. He got my demo tape to Capcore. And Capcore is a guitar player, one of the lead singers in Third World Band, which my pops and him grew up together, so in the same neighborhood. So they were like, yo, he was like, come on over. And that's really where I got my start in being able to record on anything like that, you know?
What?
So pops was more supportive, but he had to be, you know, he was locked away from I was 13 years old till I was 19. So when he came out, for him to say, no, you shouldn't do that, you know, he just wanted to support me in any way he could. With my mom, I understand her fear. And, you know, she told me 10 years after the fact that she came to one of my first shows. I got a show in the early years in a place called Halfway Tree, which is like the city center here in Jamaica. There's a big clock. And right behind one of these big banks, there was a big parking lot, and they had a stage show there in the middle of the hot sun day with me there. I was performing, but I didn't know this until 10 years later that my mom went there with my grandmother. She right. Snuck behind, was like behind a wall watching us from out in the crowd, be like, what the fuck is he doing? And she was not used to seeing me just perform and be like that. Because around the house, I could sing, but I never really spat a whole song or lyrics or nothing. I never really did that. Kind of kept it to myself. Did it at school a little. But, yeah, I started to develop after. So that was the input with my mom and my father. Since then, though, my mom's like my business person. You know what I mean? She's the one who stopped her whole life to kind of make sure that I make something out of this and get my head in the business type gear, because I'm more of the artist, and she knew that. So she kind of put her art down for my art, which is just something that I've always been very grateful for and thankful for. And a lot of people ask me at times, how does it affect, you know, how do you last so long in the business, and how does it affect your family life? And I was like, well, they're the ones that helped me to do this. You know, I mean, my mom, my brother. My brother also started his career as a musician, as a sound system dude, yeah, playing music for me, just for Sweet 16s and parties and stuff. And his sound system was the first people I did dubs for, was the first people that I recorded demos tapes with. And he was in school at the time. He was in grade 9, which is equivalent to third form here in things. So they would only play on the weekends, but every week they save their money up, or they buy equipment and buy more 45s, and you know how that game is. And so he also, when I blew up, he started to tour with me, and he is part of my management team, but also he was also on stage with me singing as a backup singer for years. So, you know, I like to tell people that even though at first mom didn't fully support, she is the backbone of how I do my business right now, and yeah, my brother as well. If I didn't have their support, I wouldn't be so far and so long in the business, I don't think.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's, but I think like in the music industry, you need to find people who are smart that have little bits to themselves that you don't have yourself and that you can trust. And yeah. I mean, who can you trust more than your family? Also, though, like, do people do say never work with your family? So like,
yeah, it is difficult sometimes. But you know, I like to look at certain positives in life.
Yeah.
And to me, even though you go through the arguments, it's better to argue or discuss and reach to a better place for whoever it is. And I like to do that with family mainly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So much people on earth don't have good relationships with their family because of the arguments and they can't stand it. But I like to go through those, man, because, you know, they are my rock, man. I care about them so much. So I don't mind those times. Honestly, it really, it's better to me than working for someone or working with someone who just doesn't get you, you know? 100%. I work with a lot of people who are not my family also. But they are, my family is very intricate, a very big part of what I do, of helping me out.
You must have seen it happen over the years of like artists getting absolutely screwed over by like record deals, bad publishing deals, like getting under
yeah.
live shows. Like, I mean, like when it comes to music and generally any sort of creative endeavor, the last person to get paid is normally the artist and manager.
Yeah, the creator. that's pretty nail on the head there, you know. It could be when you hear artists complain a lot, sometimes it is them that was eager in the beginning to just sign away something real quick because they wanted to be in the business. So I would say to younger artists, know what it is that you're getting into, like, you know, with the business side. Now, with any contract that I have done with any company, in the long run, I always thought, man, you know, that could have been better. It could have been better on my side, especially because, you know, the record costs a dollar. I'm getting a few cents off of that dollar. And I'm the one who put it all together. I created it. So, you know, there was a necessary evil back in the day, I guess you could call it then, that, you know, I would have to give most of my creativity to these people. They make the money and give me a piece of it. Mm-hmm. I still work with a record company. And this is a time in my career that I've passed through a lot of those times. And I now own my music. And this record company, Island, has enabled me to, they gave me a contract that was pretty easy to sign.
Yeah.
In terms of, they allow me to produce myself also. They allow me to put songs out in the dance hall arena that doesn't really affect what they do. And so it's a great relationship in that respect.
I mean, that's perfect. Also, Island Records is like the ultimate Jamaican like label.
I mean, isn't it? Bob Marley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and right now Buju is on Island in the States as well, Buju Bantan. So, you know, I love their input into what we've done as a genre over the years. But as I said, for me, it's been a cool relationship. You know, as with everything, you always think maybe this or that could be better. But it's been an okay one for me this time around.
How important was like Shaggy for you in your early career? Because like there wasn't too many artists from Jamaica that were going mainstream like in the 90s. Like, and then Shaggy kind of bucked the trend. And that was like round about the same time, maybe a little bit before. Before you released Baby Girl. So like you would have seen Shaggy doing it and must have thought, mm-hmm. Oh, this is achievable.
I seen in my studios. And the first producer that produced one of my first demos, his sister was a backup singer for Shaggy at the time. And so one Christmas, I was like, I want to learn how to produce, bro. And I was 19. And he's like, come to the studio and, you know, I'll teach you how to produce. And his teaching me how to produce was this, the first whole 2 weeks. He's like, here, take these wires and wrap them up. And I was like, all right. And that's what I did for 2 weeks, learning how to produce, right? So anyway, Shaggy came there one evening because they were having rehearsal and the sisters were doing the backup singing and the dancing and stuff. And his manager, Robert Livingston, heard me and heard the record. I was like, yo, that's pretty dope. And Robert Livingston actually used to manage Supercat at one point, and everyone knows that I emulate Supercat. I my style comes from definitely what he did. I have my own vibes, which has grown to a different thing, but Supercat's my hero, so to speak. So when that happened, that was amazing for me. And Shaggy and Robert, even though they are not together as a management artist team anymore, they both have been very instrumental in giving me guidance throughout this whole time. Mm. You know, where they couldn't see eye to eye any longer and left each other's management artist team, they still give me good advice, as I say. And it's never led me in the wrong direction. And so I'm always very, what can I say, very appreciative of the relationship. I spoke to Shaggy yesterday. He has been in the States and he just came back to Jamaica last week. And as I said, there's someone who I've always looked up to in terms of music and looking for advice within the business. Yeah. You guys should look out too. We have a couple of songs coming out with myself and him and Spice. That's one of them I'll tell you about. And that will probably come out early next year. We were planning to drop it this year, but I don't think it makes sense anymore. So it's being mixed now, and we're gonna kind of, you know, build up a plan to kind of release it with some format, because there's too much stuff going on right now. It's a dancehall club kind of record.
You can't have a club record out when there's no club, right?
Exactly, kind of. So, yeah. So yeah, I've released records since this pandemic thing, and I have records to release, but I just don't like that one, and I just don't feel like it's time for it, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
like, I always know that something's completely crossed over if it hits my ends, right? And that's Oma in County Tyrone, which is a tiny, small town in a very rural county, in a very rural country, right? So, like, when Bombastic by Shaggy was over and you had, like, a load of, like, people that looked like me who were probably around like 10 or 11 running around screaming, like, Mr. Bombastic, right? But the same thing happened right? When we started going to nightclubs, like, for the first time. Like, I think I was, like, probably when Get Busy came out, what year did that come out? 2003,
2004, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would have been 16. So yeah, I was going to nightclubs with that. And when Get Busy came out, like that was the point where you might be sitting on the sofa with your girlfriend or whatever. And all the girls would get up and bail to the dance floor and we'd have to run after them. And that's how you know it's crossed over, because like when it goes big like that in a somewhere as on Jamaica as Oma, you know it's done well. But that album Duddy Rock, like that was a record that like a lot of music fans that, like, opened their ears to dancehall culture, reggae,
to the genre. Yeah,
yeah, to that. Yeah,
hey, man.
And
I feel proud of that, and I'm glad that people, up to this day, you know, there's core DJs that when they meet me, they come to the backstage or the show or whatnot. I go to their radio station, or you know, they always have a vinyl of the first records, and I sign it up. You know what I mean? Amazing feeling to know that I've lasted this long. I mean, that was vinyl days, man. That was over 20 years ago. And
it's lightning in a bottle, really, because like you had the right timing, the right songs at the right time, and just the right amount of hits. Like, I mean, it was just like every single thing that could work worked, right?
And the right temperature as well.
Yeah.
but I say that often because a lot of people ask me, how did you orchestrate all of it? And I'm like, bro, I was just ready for the opportunity. That's all it is. You know, people like Shaggy opened the doors internationally for this type of genre and music. And I was just there, ready with my work. So I think that's what I concentrated on. I was only concentrating at the time at making songs that people in my own country would like to hear. And never thought it would break out, never thought it would break over as much as it did. And so I'm always thankful for that.
What was it like having other people from all around the world, like famous musicians and stuff, reach out to you to make music with them?
Crazy.
Because they wanted part of your culture like that. I mean, that's essentially what it was. Like you'd have, it'd be like Beyonce would have like you on a record, or like, you know, producers would reach out to you because they wanted in on something fresh.
That felt amazing. And that people were saying, oh, he's this new genre and this guy. And I was like, how come it's only my name? You know what I mean? Because to me, I still look up to a lot of artists here. Buen Tequila, Beanie Man, you know, people like Sizzla, Capitan. These guys put out quality music every time they go behind the mic, you know what I mean? So it was just weird to me at the time. And you know, I think that my style did stand out as different because I was more hip-hop oriented, you know, and I could hang with that crowd. And that's it, man. Other than that, I don't know how or what or why. I just know I was ready for the opportunity.
You had that sheen though, like that early 2000s sheen, like, cause you had the big video. I remember, like, that's the era that they used to spend fucking tons on
millions of dollars on videos. One song.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I didn't have satellite growing up, but my friends did. So like anytime I go to their house, I wouldn't chat to them. I'd just sit in front of the TV.
Same shit.
Watch MTV or whatever. And
exactly.
Yeah, it was like, everything felt big. Everything was big. And your tracks were just like just big club tracks, like they it just feels like
that
moment. Yeah, and it feels like that sort of that moment and that style has been back for another couple of years since in recent days, but we'll get to that like in a little bit, because I wanted to talk about like the Grammys and all the success that you had around that time, like Is it difficult for that not to go to your head, or do you just like having your family there with you keeps you kind of grounded, or did you go off the rails or anything around then? I mean, nobody would blame you for it.
Nah, every now and then you do, you know.
Yeah.
I remember times in London, my management having to call downstairs and say, Sean had a little bit of a rock star moment and we need some maintenance up here.
Well, have you ever thrown a TV out a window?
Not like that, but being drunk and happy can destroy a hotel room for sure. And you know, you get into crazy things. But again, I was 24 by the time I was becoming famous in Jamaica. So I kind of knew myself. You know, a lot of artists, especially in recent times, are young when they start. Even Beanie Man, he was 9 years old when he started to spit and DJ and stuff like that. So I started late in the game, and I think I just knew who I was. I mean, I knew who I was, and I knew who my friends were, and I knew what the business was, and I knew what business friends were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some of those business friends have become my real, true, honest friends as well. But, you know, you have to be able to separate that. And, of course, yes, my family helped me to keep grounded. and remember I'm a human being, and no matter how much people, when girls see me and say, oh my God, I'm not a god, you know what I mean? I'm a human being. I'm a tributary to the main. That's how I see myself. Mm-hmm. And that's how I see human beings. And so I try not to let it go to my head, even though sometimes I did go overboard in a couple of different places. But yeah.
One of the funny things I always think about, like when you have like a real massive crossover moment, is that like famous people tend to only hang about with famous people after that because they only really understand each other because they can't go out. Like, you know what I mean? I can walk to the... I'm like a nighttime DJ. I can go wherever the fuck I want. Like, I'm on the radio. right?
Do it.
But like, that's why famous people hang out with each other, because they can't really hang about and do normal things anymore. But it when you get big musically, there's always a movie star that latches onto you. Like, there's always like a Brad Pitt or a Johnny Depp or a Matt Damon that like goes, I'm going to hang about with the cool music guy now. Who was your movie friend?
Oh, movie friends. I used to go to LA a lot, and I remember being in the company of Mina Savari quite a bit.
Oh, wow. Right.
Mina Savari. Yeah. She's a cool girl, man. Good people's. Always was conscious, even though she's a big movie star and was hanging out with, you know what I mean, with other artists and stuff like that. She was pretty grounded, and that was pretty cool for that experience. I could tell you another time where I was in a club and I was talking. There was Nicki Minaj in the club, Rihanna was in the club, Busta Rhymes was in the club, Spliff Star was in the club, and I'm talking with everyone and we drinking and we hanging out, and there's this dude standing up beside me, but I'm not noticing who this is. So one of my friends who's not an artist or an actor or anything, he's just like, yo, I'm like, what? He knows him, right? So he's like, that's Leo. And I'm like,
Leo, who?
And I look at him and he's looking at me and he's like, and I'm like, damn, Leo DiCaprio, man. Leonardo DiCaprio standing up there. But he was shooting the movie, The Reverend, because he got this big old beard on and his long ponytail. So I didn't recognize him, didn't know who he was at first. But I met him then. Haven't really parted with much other movie stars, I don't think, so to speak. Mina Savari is probably the only one that's a friend to me.
Yeah. The music and everything, like, I mean, it's always cyclical. I can always tell what music, what scene is going to be big, because Diplo's normally dipping his toes somewhere in it. I mean, like, obviously country music is going to be big because he's releasing a country record. I mean,
all right, well, yo, you need to scoop me on what's coming after that.
I mean, I don't know, man. Ask Diplo. He seems to know. Like, maybe it's Irish traditional music. Like, listen, I'll get you on like some Irish.
Yeah, get me in the know, bro. Get me in the know. But Diplo does have that knack. You're right.
He does, yeah.
He does have that knack.
But it's all cyclical, and it takes a while. It goes out of flavor. It comes back in. It's the same with like rock music, hip hop music, drum and bass, like whatever.
Yeah, man.
It has a moment. It goes away. It comes back. And dancehall culture, I mean, like, feels like it went away for a while, and has really, really come back with a vengeance. Like,
surgeon.
I can, like, especially in the UK. I know in the US as well. You've had like since you had crossovers with Bieber and Drake and stuff. But like in the UK, it is essentially the biggest mainstream music at the moment. But kind of like tinged in different bits of genres. Mm-hmm.
So like with reggaeton a little here and with Afrobeat a little there. But I just think that and with pop music a little here and there also. And I think that that's just a testament to how huge this music really has become. And you know, when you said like sometimes it's cyclical and sometimes it goes around. For the artist, it never goes nowhere. Like, you know, the rock musician, even though heavy metal with long hair was out by the time Kurt Cobain was in, those still heavy metal people, they still were doing their thing, and they're still up to this day touring. Some bands and some artists and some people, like, look at Willie Nelson. You know what I'm saying?
shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Willie. So for someone like me, like the genre, it didn't go nowhere, and I still continue to do it. Now, I had to blend it with other popular musics to be heard. Seeing that dancehall music was the, I mean, I won an American Music Award and a Grammy within 2 years of each other. I was like the most popular artist for that time period. And then, as you said, I have this listenership now with a billion, with 5 million and 40 naughty shorties listening to me, right? So when the time kind of moved from there and started to go to dance, I had to put some dance into what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I always did that with saying, this is a dance influenced track, or this is a pop music influenced track. Like I had one called Other Side of Love, which was just very pop oriented. And She Doesn't Mind also. They were dancehall songs, but pop oriented and dance oriented, because at the time the cycle had changed and dance music was the hit, you know what I mean? But as you said, it's gone cycled back around now to the point where pop people, reggaeton people, Afrobeat sound is similar to it right now. There's music in Trinidad that's, even though it's soca, there's new music coming out called Zessing music, which the kids are spitting like dancehall acts.
What's that?
You know, so it Zessing? Is so huge. Zessing. Yeah, you should Zessing. Check it out. There's a kid called Prince Swami from Trinidad. Prince Swani. But he just talks a lot of bad man things and stuff like that. But honestly, it doesn't sound like Trinidad music anymore. It sounds like dancehall. You know, in my chat, he's spitting. Grime music also has a lot of influence from what we've done. So
big time.
I'm just proud of my genre. And no matter how much cycles come and we're not in the in now, or we are in the in now, I'm still proud of it. I'm still going to do it. I will blend it with other things, but I will always stand up for dancehall and wave that flag. I had a complaint a couple of years ago, which a lot of people kind of get me wrong about, you know, Drake's doing dancehall and people ask me what about it. And I'm like, I just wish they would give us accolades. What I mean by that is it's not, they can't do anything by giving, like, all they can do is to shed light and say that this is my dancehall single. Because think about it. If I did a country and western album tomorrow, because you told me that it's the next music coming in, and I decided to do it, I couldn't really put that out and say, this is Sean Paul's newest dancehall album, if it sounded country and western. It would be like, what is the fuck is he talking about? And Willie Nelson and RIP to Kenny Rogers, they would come after me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when these other cats are doing, I would have to say, this is my country, this is Sean Paul's country and western album. That's how I would approach it. Now, even when I blend music, I say, this is dancehall music, but I've blended it with hip hop or dance or whatever is popular at the time. They don't never give the accolades to us. They just take it. And a kid who was 9 years old, who is now 15 or 16 years old, he's like, this is so innovative. I've never heard nothing like this before. And it's like, nah, bro, it's this artist's newest music. He's innovative. I'm like, no, because if the artist did say, yo, thanks for loving my new single, it's a dancehall oriented single. Big up Jamaica, big up dancehall music and popcorn or whoever the fuck you want to big up. But it's never done in that way. The only person who I ever seen do it is Rihanna. And I'm waiting for her fucking album to come out, because she said it was a dancehall album at first, and then it came out and it was one single, Work, Work, Work. The rest of it was more eclectic and hip hop and R&B sounding that she usually does. So I was looking forward to hearing her dancehall album, but I thought, and she still is apparently going to put one out, and I thought that was really cool of her to say that I'm doing a dancehall album, because that gives power to it, and it gives respect to a genre that you now feel that is so important that you have to take a piece of and do. So big up to her, And big up to everybody doing it, but I just wish that you would be like her and say, listen, this music is so huge. I want to do a track on it. You know what I mean? There's French Montana and Swae Lee. That track is dancehall, you know? There's even a Taylor Swift song that I've heard. Do, 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 do. And she's like, what you want to say? Do, 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 do. That's dancehall, man. So,
yeah.
But like, it's dancehall influence. And so, sorry, I just want to hear that more.
If the pop genre like lifts from a certain style, then they face, then that style eats. Do you know what I mean? So like, if you've got Kanye, or you've got Taylor, or you've got Bieber, or you've got like any huge pop stars that just go, this is why I like this, then that genre eats, because then that genre gets bigger and those people get paid more, and it spreads around. I guess with the bigger sort of pop artists, like some of them maybe don't write their own beats, maybe they don't write their own
lyrics. Exactly. And that's part of the issue. So it's not for me to be bashing everybody all the time. But when I did make those statements, it blew up like, oh, he's upset at Drake. And I'm like, no, I'm just upset at the fact that none of these cats are saying, whoa, dancehall music is huge and I'm going to do a song. You know what I mean?
Like, I think sometimes it is testament to the lack of input that they may have had on the record, because like, I always find it very funny when artists that clearly don't write anything to do with their music and just turn up and sing it, get asked about the song, because I'm like, well, what the fuck would they know about this? They didn't write it.
Yeah, like, so tell us about this song. Well,
the team of
writers. It's a nice song. I like to sing it.
Exactly. Yeah. The 12 writers got together at a camp and they wrote this song and they thought that it would suit me.
Yeah.
I mean,
I do tend to have a lot more respect for people who, artists who write their own songs too. But I mean, singing is a great talent, man. I mean, you know,
big time.
If you have an amazing voice, someone else writes your song, that's cool to me. But yeah, I have more respect for people who are able to write and produce and sing it as well, you know.
With the stuff that you're putting out at the minute, like you've got the more sort of like pop oriented stuff like Calling on Me, and then you've got more other stuff like Bad in a Bed and Back It Up. I've always said, like, I'm a massive fan of listening to like grime music and patois and stuff, right?
But
not for me. I'm not able to say anything in patois without sounding fucking the worst thing ever.
Fuck it up then.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, man.
But so like, is it a case of like having this big? Because you can write pop bangers, you can hang with the top pop. As you've shown, like in the last couple of years with like Sia and Clean Bandit, but it's like almost going back to the movie star adage, like it's like one big pop record and then a big sort of dancehall club record, right?
Yeah. I think that going back to the argument I had before, when I was young in the business and then I blew up, I got so much listeners that don't really listen to other than dancehall, so to speak. There's a lot of people I help to introduce other artists to. Like when I do songs with Conscience or Sasha, or Chico on my album back in Dirty Rock days. But these are dancehall artists. But then, you know, it's just there's a lot to be said for gelling the whole thing together, you know?
Yeah, big time. So what does this like hold for like an album? Like what type of album are you going to release? Like, is there going to be one this year, next year? What's the story? What's the scoop?
I don't know. Next year, I mean, this year there's the anniversary of my first album. And people are trying to get me to do back some hits, and I don't mind, but I just always have been on doing new music, you know what I mean? Which is crazy and funny, because right now I'm sitting on a lot of records that have been new, or they're new to the public because the public hasn't heard this. But
so have you got a backlog of records ready to go then?
I do, that I'm trying to release. But since this pandemic thing and this lockdown, I've been kind of depressed, to tell the honest truth, and I haven't felt like spitting or rhyming. I did something one or two things.
Is that because of the situation of COVID, or is that like just because you're stuck in the house?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, when there's an earthquake in Haiti, when there's a tsunami in Japan, there's riots in this America right now. Like, these things affect me. I'm an artist, so I never ever want to be someone who just comes out and says, "Yeah," about a situation. I like to take it in first and say, and say what's going on. But this year, there's been a lot of fucking shit to take in.
I feel you.
I mean, it was almost a nuclear war in January, and then Australia was burning down when I was over there. I couldn't even breathe. Then I got back over here, and this shit's just chasing me. You know what I mean? Because the first two cases in Australia landed there when I was there. And I was like, fuck. I took a 22-hour plane ride back home with a mask on. That's horrible. And, you know, I'm thinking all of these things. And then now it starts to come over here. And then you're seeing people in my age group and people who have asthma like myself being really affected by it. And then these riots and people standing up for justice. And I'm like, I'm trying to take it all in so I could give it back to y'all. But it's a lot. It's a lot.
I'm just like finding that, like, I get like that. I get like that big time, man. Yeah. Well, I get like that because I consume too much. I'm just on Twitter all the time. I'm on Instagram all the time. I'm listening to people.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, the human brain is not designed to be listen to so many opinions once in a day.
All the time, yeah.
You're meant to listen to like two other people, like your kid and your missus or something like that. That's kind of it, right? Like that's the opinions that really matter. Yet you scroll and you read 10 opinions in like 10 seconds and you're like, fuck my brain.
They're all different.
Fuck my brain.
And it kind of fucks with your brain a bit. And so you know, I'm trying to do that and trying to just figure stuff out. Like, I hate this word, the new norm, but I mean, it is what it is. You know what I mean? I'm trying to feel normal again.
Yeah.
So back to what you were saying before, though, about me blending the genre. The more pop thing with Tovlo and then the more dancehall thing with Back It Up There and songs like that. I had to keep the big listenership of these people who like these pop records. And I also feel a sense of responsibility and a sense of competition still to still compete with these artists here and take part in the history of what's going on in the music here. And it's part of the reason why I'm also producing here too. I just didn't get to say that. I reckon
that we will get like a glut of your music. We'll get a lot of it, a lot of good music coming from you, like towards the end of the year, maybe next year. So let's hope that it rains in a new era. Sometimes things need to burn down to build back up again.
I've been telling people that so much, you know, for even when supernovas happen after that, there's all the magnesium and everything in the atmosphere, and it builds planets and stars, man. And so you have to have some form of destruction sometimes. And so while this stuff is happening, I'm rebuilding as we speak, as you said, but just trying to take it one day at a time, man. I have other songs that I'm going to release soon, as I said. It's one with Shaggy and Spice and myself, but it also is time sensitive. I don't feel like putting party songs in people's faces right now. I think we need inspirational songs like Calling On Me, and songs of upliftment. And yeah, people want to have fun, but it ain't the same type. It's not going to be the same club scenario. So I still have those songs, but I won't put them out as much, I don't think.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah.
Listen,
people need to focus right now, man. Yeah. And music can help that focus. Yeah.
I could sit and talk to you all night, but I don't think you want me back here for 5 hours from now. Mr. Sean Paul, thank you so much for taking the time out to come on the podcast. I've had an absolute blast chatting to you. It's been so fun. And good luck with the rest of lockdown. We may all come back to normal and maybe get back to releasing loads of records and back to a fucking club.
Yeah, bro. Ready. Thank you so much for having me. And just big up to all the fans and everybody out there checking it out. I hope you learned something. I hope it was educating and also entertaining. Big up yourself, rude boy.
Legend, man. See you later.
Cool.